The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2010 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2010. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the Internet. If you would like to find out more about the work of ACCS, please visit our website at www.accsedu.org. To order additional talks from this conference, please visit the ACCS website and click on Conferences. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
Good morning. I'm going to ask everybody, if you haven't gotten your book yet, if you can just pick it up on your way out, they'll still be there. If you can make sure you do have a packet, though, because you will need that to follow along with me today. So if we could just bow our heads and have a word of prayer, please. Father, we thank you for this day. We thank you that we can all get together as educators and parents and those who love children and want to help educate them in a classical manner. Father, we thank you for the lives of those children that you've brought into our midst, and ask that you would help us to become the best teachers and parents and administrators that we can possibly be. And we pray all these things in Christ's name. Amen. Well, for those of you who have been in this talk before, I'm sorry, I do have some of the same things to say, but I say them over and over again because I think it's really important to reinforce them. If you're like me, the year goes by and I sometimes don't think about those things. One of the things that I've found myself trying to do actually is picking up Recovering the Lost Tools of Learning and reading it every year, because there's just things that I forget. And same thing with Dorothy Sayers' essay. I try to read that at least once a year just to kind of remind myself of those things that were important. But one of the things that you're going to find that I'm passionate about, if you don't know me, is that is creative teaching. Because I believe that teachers are the people who either inspire or cause children to hate education. And so that's an awesome responsibility. That ought to be in front of you every day when you wake up, whether you're teaching in a classroom, whether you're in a co-op, whether you're a parent that's homeschooling your children. You ought to wake up every morning and say, what I'm doing today really has the effect of causing the children that are in my midst to love what they're doing and to be passionate and become lifelong learners, or it has the ability to make them really not want to love education. And so when you look at it that way, we have to ask ourselves the question, what is the best way that we can go about educating these children? On a regular basis, I have people call and, you know, they've heard about classical education and they have this impression in their mind and of what it's going to be. One, they think that all children that are doing this are brilliant. They've got to be in the top 2 percentile because their child couldn't possibly do this. It's just for those that are in the top percentage. Then the other thing they think is that it's going to be laborious and boring and that their child probably wouldn't want to do it. Well, I'm here to tell you that if what we're doing is laborious and boring, then we shouldn't be doing it. This needs to be fun and it needs to be interesting. And so how do we go about doing that? The other question that I'm asked on a regular basis is, how do you get it all done? So that's really what I'm going to concentrate on today. I'm going to concentrate on a couple things, but one of the things I'm really going to concentrate on is how do we get it done? And the way that I think you've got to get it done is by integration. But first, we're going to talk about a couple of other things, and then I'm going to head down that path this morning to talk about integration, because I really don't think we can accomplish everything if we don't integrate a lot of things together. One of the things that I do want you to realize is how many hours that you're spending with these children that you're teaching. By the way, for those of you who don't know me, math is not my subject, and so my husband had to calculate this for me a few years ago. But you're spending about 1,080 hours a year with these children that you're teaching if you're in a classroom setting. That is absolutely mortifying to me when I think about it. Do you know how much influence you're having on these children? I mean, 1,080 hours. It's unbelievable as a grammar school teacher how much time you're spending with these children. So we need to realize that when we're teaching and we do this. You're spending more time with them if you're an educator in a classroom than their parents are. And you're spending more time with them than their peers are. So you are the strongest influence in their life in that particular year. And if you're in a small school, like many of you probably are, my children, I can tell you, when they were coming through school, had some of the same teachers year after year after year. And so you're really spending a lot of time with them. So what does that mean? It means that your attitude better be great. Your attitude ought to be exciting. Children know things. There's one thing that I've learned about children is they can smell things a mile away. Okay? Now, I've always been on the administrative side as well as the classroom side. But then I was on the parent side for years. My children are now all in college or graduated from college and out of the house. But it was amazing to me, you know, what would come out of their mouth. And they knew without a doubt what teachers loved them and what teachers didn't love them. Guess what that meant? That meant that Marlon and I knew which teachers loved our children and which teachers didn't love our children. How, as a parent, what do you think that makes you feel like? When you think that a teacher doesn't love your child, and there is always going to be Johnny, who is fidgety, wiggly, doesn't raise his hand, doesn't do any of the things that you think that he ought to be doing, that you hear the second grade teacher say to the third grade teacher, "Oh, I'll be praying for you next year." Okay, if I ever hear that statement in a school, it's like these two teachers need to come in and we need to have a major conversation because those conversations never should be happening. That is a child of God. And I have something to tell you. A lot of times that's the child that's going to be the CEO of one of the largest companies. It's also very likely the child that could be the president of the United States. These fidgety, wiggly boys need creative teaching more than any of them do. But they're also the little boys that go home and say to their teacher, you know, to their mom and dad at dinner, you know, Mrs. Jones doesn't like me. I know she doesn't like me. And, you know, and mom and dad get in this conversation. So guess what? It's very likely Mr. and Mrs. Jones aren't going to like you either because they know that you don't like their child. So get them on your side. We need to look at these children as wonders of children that we are with delight and that we're going to bring and draw into our lives and educate them. Teachers also are known by the feedback that they get on how their lessons have gone. I know many of you have heard, I've heard Doug Wilson say a number of times, one of the things they looked forward to was what their children were going to talk about at the dinner table. You know you've hit a home run when you have a carpool line go by and a mom says to you, "By the way, I hear that you were talking about World War II this week, and she can tell you something about that." You have hit a home run. If that child goes home and tells mom and dad about what you've taught in your classroom, boy, that's the best you can get. Think about it in terms of our lives. When you look at sermons, what do you look at? When you're in church on Sunday and you look at a sermon, what you hope is that you walk away from that sermon with your heart being pricked and convicted, and that on Thursday of that week, you still are thinking about that sermon. That's how you're evaluating your pastor. I mean, that's the bottom line. You're evaluating your pastor on a number of things. But one of those things is, has he pricked your heart? Has he made you change your behavior? And are you still thinking about it on Thursday? Well, that's the same with us. If the children don't remember what we've taught them and they're not going home and talking about it, they're just filing it away. And it's just a piece of information that they're learning because they have to learn for a test, but they're not excited about it. Excitement brings about retention. That's the bottom line. If they're excited, they're going to retain it. And if they're excited, they're going to want to look into it more. I love when I hear that a child has gone home and wanted to get on the computer and look up more about what we talked about, or that they went to the library to get a book. One of the things that I'd encourage you to do is I love to keep a library in a classroom. It's part of what we're going to talk about from that packet today. This is my library of books that I would use if doing Monet. And so one of the things that I always like to do is encourage children to bring in books to share with the class on whatever it is that we might be studying. So if you're studying explorers, invite them to bring in all the books on Columbus and Magellan and Francis Drake and anybody that you're exploring. Have them bring those into your classroom and share them, and start a library in your classroom that children then can, and appoint a librarian, get kids involved, set up a system in your classroom where they can check out books just in your classroom about what you're studying about, because that makes them make it their own. Anytime you can have children make it their own and do part of the teaching, so to speak, it makes them excited and think about what they're doing. And so you want to look at things that way. So get them to do that. I also believe that teaching is very multisensory. I know that's kind of one of those lingo terms that some of us don't like because we think it sounds not real classical and all of that. And yes, I was an educator in the generation, you know, of whole language and all those good things that we all know aren't good. But there are some good things about them, and there are some historical things about them. You're going to have children in your classroom that have many, many different learning styles. You're going to have auditory learners. You're going to have visual learners. You need to find out what those children, how they learn. I don't care how many children you have in your classroom. If you can't get to know each individual student and how they learn, then you need to go to your administrator and ask them to go to your board and tell them you've got too many children in your classroom and you can't do a good job. You can't give them what they're buying, because you've got to be able to get to know these students and know how they learn, because no two children are going to learn alike. And so we need to get to know them. And you need to offer things for visual learners, and you need to offer things for auditory learners. Now, let me also say this. That does not mean if a parent comes in and says, oh, my child is an auditory learner and they just don't write things down well, I need them to take their spelling test without having to write it down. No, they need to learn to write it down. You need to have to do that. That's not what I'm talking about. But what I am talking about is if they are an auditory learner, bringing them up to your desk and going over their spelling list with them orally, finding the time in your day to do that. Because if they're just writing it down, they're probably not going to get it. So it means you need to spend that extra 5 minutes. Some of you I can see are looking at me like, you just don't understand. I don't have time in my day to do that. Find a volunteer mom that does then. The answer is not, I can't, I don't have time. The answer is, how do I facilitate it? Have parents sign up to come in and help you do those things. One thing I would tell you is, particularly with things like grammar and spelling, if you have children, you know, somebody says to me, well, why do you have 5 children writing out their spelling list and they're writing their words out 10 times? And over here, you've got a mom who's orally calling out the words, and then you have another child that's off there doing it on their own. Well, the reason is because I've taught the class their lesson, but these children learn this way, and this is how they're going to retain it. It's not about what's best for the teacher. It's about what's best for the students. And so we need to learn how to facilitate those things. The other thing is review. Children learn and retain information because we've gone over and over and over it again. It's what I said to you at the beginning. I realized after a while that as many times as I'd read Recovering the Lost Tools of Learning, or I'd read Dorothy Sayers' essay, that if I didn't read it over and over again every year, there was just a lot that I forgot in it, and things that I just couldn't recall. So I've started reading that every year. It's the same kind of thing with children. When you teach a lesson, it's why I love Saxon math. It's why I love Shirley Grammar. I guess maybe I shouldn't say this, but it's why I like Veritas History Program. It's review. Look at curriculum that has built-in review. And if it isn't there, then you as the teacher need to do it. You need to put the review in. But if you only teach something on September 8th, and then you think they're going to remember it, in April, they're not. They're not going to remember it. So your lessons have to have built-in review. Well, what does that mean? How do you do that? Think of fun and interesting ways to do it. I love games. To me, games are some of the best ways that we can do that. In history, for instance, one of the things that I like to do is have the students take their history cards that they're using and have them write out questions that they put on index cards in a box. And then at the end of the week, Fridays to me are great game days and great review days to kind of build an hour into your schedule where you have review and games at the end of the day. You know how it is. Fridays, everybody's tired. You don't get a lot done from 1:30 to 3 on Fridays. At least most people don't. Teacher's worn out, student's worn out, mom's worn out if she's the one teaching. So let's do what we can do to make the best of the time. Well, one of those things is to do review at that point. So take whatever subject it is. I like to keep a shoebox that I have the students put questions in. So for me, it's the questions off of their history card. They put it in the box, and at the end of the week, divide up the classroom, or if you're doing it with your own children, just do it individually, or if you have two children, let them be on a team together. Draw questions out of there, but you're building a bank from the whole year. And so I just rotate through those questions of review. It's the same thing with any English rules, spelling rules, any subject you can think of that you want them to commit to memory. Have them put those things in a box, draw them out, and then just work your way through the whole box, put the cards back in, and do the same thing. It's also a great thing to do. I don't like children to have time where they don't have anything to do, particularly in a classroom. There's one thing I've learned. It's that that's when little boys get in trouble, okay? As an administrator, one of the questions that I always say when a child's sent in for discipline reasons, one of the very first things that I look at is, were they idle? Because if they were idle, it's your fault. I don't literally mean this, but it was your fault, not their fault. Now, you understand I don't literally mean that, but the teacher is to blame somewhat, okay? Because they need something to do, or guess what, guys? They're going to get into trouble. And so it's a great thing. Have them go to the box. Have them go through the cards themselves to practice their questions. And if you need a child that needs to be motivated by something, start a chart, put stars on it. For every 10 they get right, they get to, or 20, they get to put a star up on there. And you can work through that way. But find things like that to do. Another thing that is great is bingo. There are tons of bingo games out there, and those are great review things. This happens to be Frontier Jingo. They have these for art, music, history, grammar. There's a whole product line out there. And these are wonderful review things to do on a Friday afternoon when your students are tired and worn out. Or when you find, keep this kind of thing in your classroom so that if you do end up with 30 minutes that you don't have anything to do. For me, it was always the art teacher called in sick. Okay, now I've got an extra hour that I didn't have anything planned. Okay, what am I going to do? These are great things to have to do for review. Even if you're not the Latin teacher, you can review their Latin vocabulary, and your Latin teacher will love you for it. Ask your Latin teacher to give you a Latin. Every Latin teacher has a bingo game, Vinco. They just do. Ask them to give you copies of it so that you can have that on hand for your students to, do together or for you to do with them when you need to. Then ask ourselves, okay, how are we going to evaluate if they're retaining all this information? Are your tests cumulative? Are you putting things on your tests to let you know that they're retaining the information? And I would go so far as to tell you it shouldn't just be your information. In history and Bible, for instance, we build into our program a review from prior years. Because I don't care that I don't want them to just remember about the Middle Ages when they're in fourth grade or whenever it is that you do it. I want them to remember it when they're 50. Okay? And so what I want to do is build into our system, and you as a school, you as a parent, whoever you are, need to build into your system so that you're reviewing those things that you want them to build into their lifelong learning gate, so to speak. You need to ask yourself as a faculty or as a parent, what are those things? Does your school have a list of those things? You know, we all talk about grammar schools, the time to like fill their memory with everything we want them to memorize. Do you know, as a teacher, could you right now, if I called on you, don't worry, I won't, but could you tell me what your school, what you as a parent, what you as a co-op, what you want your children to know at the end of sixth grade? That is critical, because if you don't, there's no way you're going to be able to review. Okay? You have got to do that. So you need to ask yourself that question. What do I want my children to know so that we can review? And then build that in. Write your test in ways that you're reviewing material that if you're a fifth grade teacher, you want to be reviewing material that your third grade teacher and your fourth grade teacher taught, particularly in content area subjects. History, Bible, those kind of things, particularly with Bible. The last thing we want is for a student to get to the end of their grammar school years and not be able to give us a comprehensive overview of the Bible. That ought to be the most important thing that we do. And so are you building that into how you do that? Well, one of the things that happens is I often hear teachers say, you know, this all sounds great. You've just got one of those personalities that's kind of all over the place, and so creativity is your thing. It's just not my thing. Then you ought to get out of the profession. If it's not your thing, find another job. Everybody's creative in their own way. You're not going to be creative in the same way that I am. I love hands-on projects, okay? If you walked into my classroom, you would think it was organized chaos. In fact, you might not have thought it was organized chaos. You might just have thought it was chaos, but I knew it was organized. But I'm not asking you or telling you to do it my way. You need to find your way to be creative. I had a teacher that I know is one of these very, I'm obviously loud and boisterous. You can tell that. But I have a friend who's very quiet and soft-spoken, and she's a kindergarten teacher, and she has this rocking chair. And if you walk into her classroom, she never raises her voice above this level. She has those children wrapped around her little finger. I mean, if she says jump, they say how high. And it's because she loves them. She sits in that rocking chair and reads to them, and she's got all these things that she does with them and puppets. And it's incredible. I would never be able to teach that way. But she has found her way of being creative. So I don't want you to think that you've got to be creative like I am, but if I walk in your classroom and I don't see anything fun and the walls are bare and you don't have any pictures up and you don't ever, by the way, you need to display students' work. That's really important. Students need to know that what they do is important. If your school administrator never gives you a pat on the back, it's pretty lousy. You don't feel like you're doing a very good job. Children are the same way. If we don't reinforce with them, man, you're doing a good job, they don't know that. And here's the other thing. I'm not an egalitarian. If any of you all know Veritas Press, you know we're not egalitarian. But you have got to make sure that little Jimmy over there, who never is going to have the most beautiful handwriting in the world, has papers that are up there. I read a book last year in one of my talks called The Motivation Breakthrough. And in this book, there was a story of a young boy who had never, he ended up going to a different school. And when he did, they had a day where they displayed all the students' work. And the teachers were given the instruction to find something with every student's work that was worthwhile. Not to tell them they were doing something good that wasn't good, but every student has done something worthwhile. And this boy came in and, you know, this father, this CEO of a company was brought to tears. And the administrator couldn't figure out why and said, is something wrong? Have we done something wrong? And he said, no. My son's work has never been displayed before. And that just broke my heart because I see that happen all the time. It's the same five children that have their papers up on the wall. It's the same, you know, five children that we always talk about. And I'm not talking about giving everybody an award, okay? I don't believe in that. But there is something good in every student's work that we can tell them good job for what they really are doing. One of the things we do have to be careful about, even though I answered the question, no, this education is for everyone, is remembering that this is a rigorous education. It's hard work, guys. These children are doing hard work, and it's our job to make it fun, but we've got to remember we've got to encourage them, and we've got to encourage them on a regular basis, or they're going to hate it. They're just not going to like it. Who wants to do something that's just tough all the time and you're not encouraged? Well, I'm going to ask you to open up your packets here, and I'm going to try to do this PowerPoint. I did. Okay. How do we get it all done? Well, first of all, let me just say this. I think you need to kind of change up your classroom all the time. So one of the ways that I like doing that, and I hate using this word because it's got some bad kind of lingo with it, but it's going to make sense to you, unit studies. Okay, I'm not a unit study person in one sense, but I am in another. And that is, unit studies can make your classroom interesting and help you integrate things, okay? So I'm not a unit study in the sense of I'm going to just study this month and just study this month. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about something to make your classroom cohesive while you're still doing your normal math, your normal English, your normal et cetera, okay? It's kind of a unifying thing. So one of the things that I like to do, one of the things that seems to get lost in our education these days is art and music and the study of composers and artists and all those things. I love bringing an artist into the classroom. One of the things I like doing is having an artist of the month that we just study. I think it's great if you take your grammar school teachers, divide up all the artists that you want to study over a 5-year period, and each teacher's assigned certain artists that kind of are the artist for that classroom. Well, it also makes your classroom an interesting place. You know, what better thing than to have children look at great art? And even if you live in a place where there isn't a wonderful museum, we're very spoiled in Lancaster because we can go to Philadelphia, Washington, or New York on a regular basis. So there's really not anything we can't see. But if you're in a place, the computer is a great place now. Virtual museum tours are actually unbelievable these days. And so if you can't go to a museum, then take your children on a virtual tour. But take an artist and study them for the month. So I happen to choose to kind of go over with you how I do with that, and that's Monet. This is a painting, and I had a friend of mine's child write an essay on Monet to kind of show you how I would integrate. We use the Institute for Excellence in Writing for our writing program, which I think is a wonderful writing program. Doesn't matter what you use. You have a choice. You can either have them write about my favorite vacation, which how many times have they written about their favorite vacation, or take your writing assignment. Every English program has writing assignments, right? Everybody's English program. Okay. Think about what it is you want to integrate. Because here's the deal. We can write three things. We can write something for history, we can write something for our English class, and we can write something for our, let's say, literature. If they're writing those three things, nothing is going to get written well. Nothing. Because what you're doing is you're flying through as fast as you can, trying to get it off your checklist that you've accomplished it, so that when your administrator comes in and says, did you get everything done in your lesson plans this week? You can say, yes, I did. That's not doing anybody any good. If children are going to learn to become great writers, you need to have time to work with them. They need to have the editing time. So integrate things. That might mean it's history that you're taking whatever it is you're writing about for your writing program that you're using and writing about something from what you're studying in history that week. It might mean, for me, it was going to be on an artist, on Monet. And so they wrote this story about, I'm going to have to leave here. Sorry, guys, but you can still hear me. My favorite students are writing from pictures in IEW. That's what this was. You know, boating on the rivers, on the river, is it Ept, is my favorite Monet painting. It is very hard to choose from so many beautiful paintings. I chose this painting because it seems peaceful, quiet, and full of many lovely colors. This was a second grader, by the way. One reason I adore this painting is because two ladies who are not very active make, it's terrible when I can't see this, make, here we go. Thank you. They seem to be enjoying the beauty of the day. Another reason I admire this painting is because it reminds me of quiet things. And the placid, do you get that? You like that word for a second grader. I really like that word. The waves appear to be very, can somebody, yeah, the ocean waves. Finally, I enjoy the colors because they blend so well. Amazingly, Monet has the ability to mix many colors to make the painting seem more realistic. Okay, this was a second grader, you guys. Okay, and this, and then there, here was their IEW outline. Now, this actually has not been edited and all of those things yet. She quickly threw this together for me. I had to call a friend and say, can you have your child throw together? My friend's in the back of the room, by the way. But anyway, can you have your child throw this together for me? So doing this, though, lets you take the time to study an artist. So now they've had to learn how to do research. They've examined a painting that you've been able to talk about. And they've accomplished something for their English lesson. Now, this is, we're going to go through a bunch of different things. There's going to be an outline here that you're going to see. But in integrating things together, these were actually all projects from our sixth grade history cards that were done. So a campfire meal. I am real big on meals, on cooking things and having the kids have feast because I think it's a way to get them involved. Whatever you're studying in history, you can come up with some feast to do. We have a, this particular year we talk about a cowboy camp out thing that they do and do a campfire meal. We're going to go through this here real quick because I want to, oh, we'll go back. Okay, so, no, somebody asked me the question, do you have art cards yet? No, we're working on them. We will at some point get them done. But one of the things that you can do, we have a, if you go to our website, there's a blank card. It tells you on here where to go. There's a blank card. Have children make extra cards from whatever you're studying to put into their timeline. I love timelines. I don't care whose timeline you use. Timelines are great. It's a visual image to children of where things fit together in history. And the great thing about it is it's so unifying because now I can throw my artist into a timeline, okay? So they're going to study Claude Monet. Well, one of the things that we did here, if you look at your very first sheet that you have here, is we actually put typos in this card, okay? We did that intentionally. We wanted to teach editing. So now they're going to read this, but they're going to edit it, okay? So now they're studying about the artist. I needed to get editing into my English for the week because they're learning about capitalization and punctuation, and now they're doing it here. So guess what, guys? I've accomplished two things, all right? Actually, I've accomplished three because I've had them do a writing assignment also. If you flip over, you'll see there, you know, we have them write out the corrected corrected flashcard. Now you've just accomplished a fourth thing, handwriting, okay? Now, somebody's looking at me going, this is a lot of thinking through. It is. And let me throw this in here for you real quickly. The biggest thing a teacher can do on the front end is plan. My husband will tell you I'm a disorganized mess. He's sitting in here, so he'll shake his head and say, yes, I am. And if I did not plan, if I didn't sit down at the beginning of a school year and do lesson plans, and have something to hold myself to, I promise you we would accomplish a quarter of what needed to be accomplished. Because I get off on rabbit trails. You know, we're going to blow up Vesuvius. Well, my goodness, that's a whole lot of fun. I don't need to build a volcano this big. Let's have them build a volcano this big. So now I've got 4 weeks on building this volcano and blowing it up. So planning all these things. If you want to integrate all this, guys, you have got to plan on the front end. Classroom teachers, here's the other thing. If you plan on the front end, everybody has those lovely open house nights, you know, where mom and dad come in and they sit and then you introduce yourself. Hi, I'm Mrs. Detweiler, da 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 da. When they're there in September, guess what? They're eager beavers. They are ready to go. They're ready to roar. Nobody's tired. Everybody's ready to go. What I always tell teachers is have your entire year planned out. Every single project that you want to do for a year. Have manila envelopes, the instructions for the projects in the envelopes. Guess what? Would anybody like to volunteer to help me? Here's my calendar. This is the week we'll be doing it. Would you be willing to come in and do this project and put everything together? Guess what? You will hand every one of those out in September. If you wait till April to ask somebody to do it, you will not find a soul to help you. Because not only are you tired, but guess what? Mom is tired. She's been driving carpool, going to basketball, swim practice, you know, whatever it might be. They're tired. They don't want to help. They want school over. But if they committed to it in September, 9 times out of 10, they'll go ahead and do it. Be organized. Do it on the front end. Have your projects. Have the instructions for the projects. Put them in there. Also, for the administrators that might be in here, it's a great thing because 9 times out of 10, the parents are willing to pay for those things when they put them together and bring them in. So you've just saved your classroom a lot of money. Okay, now back to this. Whatever it is you want to study, a scientist and whatever it might be, make a flashcard. If you're using our program, we've got, if not, do it however you do it. But we've got blank flashcards on our website now that you can download and use. Okay. Now, if you're using Shirley Grammar, one of the things, or any grammar program normally has letter writing. Here you go. Here's you can study a painting of an artist. And then you can write a letter on your postcard to go to somebody. And actually send it. That's another thing. Turn it into a geography lesson. We're going to get there too. But send it somewhere. Start pen pals for your classroom. If you look out there, there's a table that's got the Classical School of Meads. I don't want to overwhelm them, but those would be great pen pals, guys. But there's lots of places that you can get pen pals from. Study the painting. There's some great books out there. Art and Story, How to Talk to Children About Art. These go through different paintings, and they're stories that you then can read about the painting to the children. So I think it's a fun thing. Have, like I said, you know, an artist a month, and then read them stories about the painting. I like reading stories to children after lunchtime. Everybody's wound up, kind of get back and focused. That's a great thing to do. But then have them study the painting and answer questions about that painting that there are. Then if you keep flipping through here, you'll see there's actually how to do a painting. There's another book here called Monet and the Impressionist for kids. Great ideas in here. And there's a whole series of these, but these are great. If I was doing Monet, I'd start a garden, for instance. Monet always painted in the garden. I would have a garden in my classroom or, you know, as a homeschool mom, I would do those things with my children. Study, you know, look at those kinds of things. Have children be responsible for it. And then you can bring that, if you're teaching science, bring that into your science. And then there are art projects in here. Same thing here. Here's an art project that they can do. And just because you have an art teacher at your school doesn't mean you shouldn't bring art into your classroom. That's one of those things that children actually, I love having centers in a classroom. If you're fortunate enough to have a place, love having paint, pencils, paper in the back of your classroom for children to go back there and be able to draw and explore. I think that's very, very important to do. Okay, then Just something fun. Cut apart the squares and rearrange the pieces to put the painting in proper order. Just a fun activity for them to do to study the painting. Because what you can do, you can actually take these squares and talk to them. It's not just about the puzzle. But, you know, take a look at the face. Take a look at the waves on the skirt. What does that remind you? Where did he get his inspiration? Did the waves come from the fact that Monet loved the ocean so much and how he was able to incorporate that into his paintings? Then write a poem about a painting. Maybe you have that in English. Write a poem about that. Now, we're going to go through here. And you'll see how we make a timeline and put Monet into the timeline. I think it's important to have a timeline up in your classroom that you can add things to. So for us, it's our history cards, but then we're going to add Monet in. We might add a scientist in. We might add a missionary in. Whatever it might be, just to keep the timeline. Then geography, same thing here. Letting them see, okay, this is what they're studying. In history, cowboys, and the West. So this was happening in the United States and then Monet's over in France. What does that mean? Where is that? You know, sing your geography songs about France, but having them see visually, children seeing things visually is critical for them to do. Okay, the rest of this is just through these, through what you've been looking at here. Then you'll see, the last thing you're going to see here is the outline, an IEW outline for a story for writing from paintings. So remember, you're making memories. These kinds of things, are they a lot of work? Absolutely, they're a lot of work. You know, the first year you teach is always your hardest, but if you add to it, but guys, it's worth the effort. I can promise you that. I still, we just had our end of the year gathering for our online school. And I had children coming up to me, you know, with projects that they'd done over the year and talking to me about what their teachers had done with them. And they're going to remember those things for the rest of their life. I mean, they are. And that's what you want. I want to hear, you know, a parent say to me, I think my child will do that with their children when they have their own children because it made such an impression on them. You know, when you read a book, are you excited? Are you so excited when you read Alice in Wonderland to your children that you can guarantee that that child is going to read Alice in Wonderland to their children? Is that the kind of inspiration that you're giving them? That's what we need to be doing. We need to be making memories that are going to last a lifetime. Well, I'm going to open it up for questions now. There's a few minutes left here. Yes. Yes. Right. Well, I've had teachers do a number of different things. Most teachers put them in, put them on the back wall of the room and ask the students not to turn around. And are they going to turn around? Possibly. The other thing some people do is they put them on felt and hang them on a pole. You know, so you've got a pole and then they, like a quilt would be that you hang, and then they just remove it when they take the test. So, no problem. Yes, back there. I'm sorry, did you say index cards? Okay, yes. If you want to make your own flashcards. If you're just, she asked the blank flashcards that we have and images that you use, if where can you get things without copyright? If you're only using them for your classroom, not for reproduction for other people to purchase, pretty much the rule across the board is that you can use them for educational purposes as long as you say where they came from. You just can't sell them or do things like that. And the internet's a great place to go to get that. Yes. What was IEW? IEW is the Institute for Excellence in Writing. It's the writing program that Veritas Press recommends. It's Andrew Pudawa's program, and it's an incredible writing program. to teach children. They use a method of modeling so that they're making an outline of somebody else's work and then filling in the most important words in what's called a keyword outline and then writing their own story from there. Yes, over here. Do we begin IEW in second grade? Yes, we do. We start IEW in second grade, use it at a very limited basis. What we've done is we've merged Shirley Grammar and IEW. We have lesson plans that actually script out that entire merger. Because if you were to do both Shirley Grammar and IEW, you'd kill yourself. And so we've merged the two together, we cut certain lessons in Shirley and merge the IEW in where we think it's appropriate. Yes. Yes, our lesson, Veritas Press does have lesson plans that are available for purchase. It's per grade level, that's correct. Per grade level and per discipline, everything. They're totally scripted, so they tell you every day of the week what to do and how to do it. That's correct. Yes, over here. For music, yes, we do have things that are similar for music. We sure do. If you want to talk to me at the booth afterwards, I can tell you. Sure. Or look it through the catalog. We have things in there. Sure. Yes, in the back. Yes. Sure. I think one of the best ways that I've learned, and my background was special education, but one of the best ways that I've seen with students to do that is, you know, when I've got a child that's very articulate in a conversation with them, but they're not doing very well on their test, you know, we can quickly jump to the conclusion that they're lazy, but my guess is that's probably not the issue. And so why aren't they doing well? So then I will take, I'll take the same test, go through it with them orally, and if they know the answers, then I know that there's some disparity there and ask myself, okay, then you've got to ask yourself, what is the bigger issue? If you continue to see that, I think at that point it's time to, you know, go to your administrator and say, I'm seeing issues with this child. And so taking, you know, that child and working with them one-on-one, you know, I think is really the best way to do it. The other thing is just in playing these games, when you've got children that do better when it's auditory, it's normally because they're more of an auditory learner. And then, you know, children that just really excel when you have written things. I think it takes, to me, it's about a 6-week thing just in seeing how they're doing in the classroom. There are tests that you can give, but I would not suggest doing that on a classroom basis. I'd wait till you see an issue and then kind of up the ante, so to speak. Other questions? Yes. Sure. If you stop by our booth, we can provide you with those. If they're not there now, Marlon will make sure that they are very shortly. We need lesson plans, printouts, please. Yes. Great. Other questions? Wow, quiet group today. No other questions here. Okay, well, let me just show you a couple other things that I forgot to, and I was afraid we'd run out of time. We have about 2 minutes here. Talking about books, and one of the things that I do if we're doing Monet is I would just collect anything that I could on Monet and have in my classroom. So these are the kinds of things that I'm talking about having children bring in. And even, it's amazing, Katie Meets the Impressionist. I read this one time to a group of fifth graders, and I thought, they are not going to go for this. They loved it. It was great. So don't think that even picture books, particularly artists, that the older students aren't going to like them. The same thing actually going up. This Famous Artist series, it's not something that I would really pick out for first graders, but I've used this with first graders before very, very successfully. So, all right. Well, thank you all for coming. I appreciate it. If you have any other questions, I'll be happy to answer them.